When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Matriarch Rising Festival, our annual summer solstice women's gathering, is here on my gorgeous land in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And it is the place to connect with me and the free birthing women and sovereign midwives of this epic birth liberation movement. I teach classes and host an intimate meet and greet the very first night of the festival, and you will even catch me DJing. Yes, I am Matriarch One. You'll get to meet all of our Free Birth Society luminaries, our wise women teachers, who you know from your favorite FBS courses. You'll meet the very women I interview on this podcast. This is the place for wild women and moms to meet up, connect, and forge friendships that can last a lifetime. It's truly the climax of everything we do, and MRF is so close to my heart. We're scaling back MRF 25 to be the most intimate yet, capping it at only 150 tickets, because this year I want to go deep. I just love the experience of getting to know each and every one of you by the end of the festival. For a long time, I held the vision of creating a women's gathering where true sisterhood could be woven, and Matriarch Rising is the manifestation of my dreams. I'm so glad I get to share it with all of you, and I want you there this year. Come learn directly from me and surround yourself with powerful women from all ages, all walks of life, and from all over the world. Make sure you sign up for our mailing list so that you can be the first to know when we roll out all of our insider insights of this summer's festival. I'll see you soon. Every now and then, a product comes along that our entire family can't get enough of. And lately, it's Masa chips. Delicious chips made the way food was meant to be. Just three simple ingredients: organic corn, salt, and beef tallow. No seed oils, no fillers, no ultra-processed garbage. Just real, whole food that nourishes rather than depletes. What we put into our bodies matters. It affects our energy, our mood, our resilience. And yet, the food industry today is completely disconnected from what's real and nourishing. Just like birth, food is one of the most powerful ways to claim sovereignty over our bodies. And it's no surprise that a sovereign birthing family is who makes these chips. When you snack, snack on something real. Go to masachips.com/discount/freebirthsociety and use code FREEBIRTHSOCIETY for 20% off your first order.
Welcome, Danielle.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation. We are getting into body hair today. This is a topic I've wanted to tackle here with this audience for a long time, and You seem like the absolute perfect woman to do it with. So yeah, today is not a free birth story, but I still want you to tune in and listen, because if you are still shaving your precious hair from your body religiously, routinely, this might challenge you and open your eyes. So my intention today is to share our personal stories, and Danielle admitted that she's fairly obsessed with this topic, so she's got lots of wisdom to share about it to get you thinking. And who knows, maybe you will put down the razor after this episode if you're not already. And I'm sure a lot of you already have untangled yourself from the hair removal industry and all that it comes with. And so this might feel validating and fun for you to listen to as well. Okay. So why do you allow your body to have the hair it tries so hard to grow?
So I started allowing my hair to do its thing in my mid-20s. And I'm a body worker, and in the last 4 years, I've been practicing some manual therapy for the nervous system. And I think talking about hair and its biological purpose is so important, just to like put the context above our conversation. So we'll actually start with gestation. One of the first cellular splits that occurs when you are growing in your mother's womb is it comes from primitive cells called the ectoderm. And the ectoderm is where our skin and the central nervous system come from. So it's one of the first cellular splits. And for the first few weeks, those cells are just kind of souped together. And then at about week 3 or 4, they begin to differentiate into dermis tissue and neural tissue. So the neural tissue is the brain and the spine, and the dermal tissue begins to migrate out. And that's the boundary towards which everything else develops. And neurologists accept this now, that like the skin, the brain, the spinal cord, like it's all the nervous system. If you want to look at it, like the skin is the most superficial layer of the brain, or the brain is the most deep layer of the skin. That is what we're talking about. And hair, every single hair has what's called a hair ending organ that registers the slightest movement in your experience and environment. So this is like big information. Like these are antenna that are gathering information about our experience and our environment. So essentially, like when you shave, you are numbing out to a degree. And that's a big part of why I choose not to modify my body, is because I want to feel life. I want it to happen to me. And I started shaving when I was like 12. And when I moved to Austin in my early 20s, that's kind of like when I decided to look at that in a different way. And a big part of what spurred that different thought process is like the culture that I was in was just like hippie, crunchy kind of culture.
So what was your gateway? Were you seeing women with hairy armpits and having thoughts about that? Like, how did it happen?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like I grew up in a rural town in Texas where there were like kind of the regular standards of beauty. And when I moved to Austin, you know, I started seeing women with just, hairy armpits, hairy legs, you know, hairy arms. I know I never shaved my arms, but I know like a lot of people do modify like every part of hair
as much
growth.
As possible.
Yeah.
Be nude like a baby. That's the message. Look as close to a 3-year-old girl as humanly possible.
Yeah. And like, what's under that, you know?
Lots of bad stuff. Yeah. So you
saw
some armpit hair. Did you already know this about the nervous system and all the beautiful sensory psychic?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
So you didn't know any of that yet, but you saw women allowing their hair and it sparked a possibility for you? Like, what was the
I think
the
it was
jumping
pretty
point?
Gradual. I think it was pretty gradual, and like, at least my experience, like, it's not a pleasurable thing to have to consistently like shave everything. And like, I don't know, it's just like time consuming and not fun, and it feels gross to me. So it was just kind of like a no-brainer once I got this permission by looking at all of these other women who still looked radiant and feminine. I mean, it can be really uncomfortable. Again, coming at it from like a sensational aspect, you know, the reason that as you grow your hair out, it is irritating is because you're getting all of this sensory input that you haven't had for maybe decades of your life.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like that prickly feeling, you know, that's because you have fresh sensation. And if you get past that, that's like the hard part. But if you get past that, you like get used to the new sensory input. So I think like probably for the first year, there was some like mental pushback of, do I feel beautiful this way? And that was an invitation to really look at like, well, my feelings about body hair aren't really my own.
Right.
Like that was programmed in, and every culture has their own feelings about body hair. I mean, there are cultures in times past that celebrated it. And so I just really started to think about like, why do I feel this way?
And how many years ago was that you allowed?
Probably about 10 years ago, early 20s.
Okay.
I'd say it was probably.
And so now, what's it like for you 10 years in?
Oh, I will never go back.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is, it's so funny to think about like how suppressing it is. And, you know, coming from that numbing out, like, it's essentially telling women, like, you can't expand into life. You're not meant to, you know, be more than what we want you to be.
It is such a visual flag. It's a virtue signal to the tamed woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shows the world, I am tamed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty like mind-blowing message when you realize what it is. Yeah, I was whatever fourth grade is. What is that, 9? I begged my mom to let me shave my legs. I was going to private Catholic school and you had to wear like, you know, everyone wore the same shorts, and other girls in my class were shaving their legs. And, you know, of course I thought it was so cool. And I had an older sister. And so my mom said, okay, fine. And she let my older sister shave my legs. And I remember it. I remember the bench in the shower. And I was like, I'm becoming a woman, you know, like I felt so initiated. It was a true rite of passage into the wrong fucking direction. You know, now I realize, but I didn't know then. Cause I was like, groom me. I'm 9. I'm so easily impressionable. So my sister shaves my legs, and then soon thereafter we're in the Keys. I'm from Florida and we're in the Keys. And there was a friend of our family who was a lesbian who didn't shave. And I'd known her for a long time and she was there at the house. And I showed her, I remember this memory of going up to her and going, look, like I shaved, look at my legs. And I will never forget, she looked at me and she said, Oh, congrats. You've officially become a slave.
Oh my goodness.
And wow. I'll never forget it because I was like, what? You know, like I it didn't make sense. And I was smart enough at 9, you know, and I knew she didn't shave and I knew she was like more edgy and open-minded or whatever. And, you know, I had some awareness of what she meant. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So then that was that. My life goes on and I'm of course shaving. And I don't even think about it until my daughter's like 1 year old. So many, you know, my whole, you know, many years pass, of course. And I do remember in retrospect that I would see, I mean, I was living in LA, like, of course there were women. I went to Burning Man, like, of course there were women who allowed their hair. And I always had this kind of not totally conscious thought of like, that's badass. Something about it, like, I'm not going to do it, but wow. You know, it always marked confidence for me. It always marked embodiment for me. And there was something, you know, not totally cognitive. There was some awareness in me. I still othered them for sure, but I would see it. And I was like drawn to it and was like, there's something really badass about that. And yeah, so I remember that kind of marker in my younger, you know, 20s. And I had this very specific moment where, I mean, this was only 6 years ago, so it wasn't even that long ago. I was in my bathroom and my little 1-year-old daughter, you know, was like toddling about, and I went to grab my razor because I was going to shave my legs. And I never like hated doing it. It was just a part of my shower routine. It was never really anything I thought much about. I didn't have any, yeah, it really wasn't something that I thought much about. It was just a part of what you do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so I'm in the shower and I grab my razor to go to shave my legs, and I start shaving my leg and I look over and my daughter is just standing there watching me. Of course, as she does, right? And everything changed in that moment. I had such profound awareness of the imprinting and the initiation, you know, that I was teaching her by mm-hmm. being a woman who shaves mm-hmm. and who, whether I'm aware of it or not, was trying to look like a young girl, like a young child. And so it just happened in a moment. I mean, I was shaving. I looked at her. She's just watching me, not like horrified. She's just watching me because I'm her mom and I'm doing something weird. And everything came together in that exact moment. And I was shocked and I just threw the razor in the trash. And so I'm sharing that much of that story because I want to say to women who are considering this, I want to be really honest that it has taken me years to move through my stuff about it. And it's not all gone. Like you said, Danielle, I definitely have a good handle on, like, I know what thoughts were given to me that might still be reoccurring and they just don't have much power in them, but they still are present. And I discovered as I allowed my body hair to come in, I was so self-conscious, so self-conscious. And I remember going to this yoga class, you know, and of course you're like, it's hot, you know, and I was in a tank top or something. And I remember going, and it was the first time I had debuted my armpits, you know, and I was so in my head about it, so self-conscious. And we're doing some pranayam thing with our arms up in the air. And I'm just watching my thoughts and I'm like, everyone's looking at me. Everyone's noticing. And what was true was no one gives a shit. No one's looking. No one was noticing. And I laughed at myself because that's pretty toxic insecurity to make up, to be so insecure and self-centered, really, that you make up that everyone is like thinking about you, you mm-hmm. know, which normally mm-hmm. I'm not like that at all. but it brought out like a pretty toxic level of insecurity and self-consciousness. And so, yeah, that first year was not easy. You know, it was very confronting. I felt a lot of self-consciousness. And that still might spike every now and then. It, like I said, it doesn't have the same, you know, sometimes I'll go places. I travel a lot with my family, and sometimes I'll be in environments where it'll occur to me, and I'll even say to my husband, like, I'm the only woman here with body hair. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, just wow, I'm in a packed restaurant, you know, on the beach of 1,000 people, and I'm the only one with body hair, most likely. I mean, I guess I can't be 100% positive, but most likely. Yeah. And just wow, you know, and I feel so clear on my choice. And but yeah, I wanted to name that it definitely took me a while. I mean, it happened in stages. And to be honest, even now, I wouldn't say when I see it on myself, I don't think it's beautiful. That's not my, like, I love it because it's complicated. And like, I understand there's so much poison, you know, programming in my brain and da da da. But when I just see my body, or my leg hair or my armpit hair, I don't, the first thing I think isn't, oh, how beautiful. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is when I see other women's body hair, that is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still some othering that I do where I'm like, it's badass on everyone else. And this is like unconscious, you know, this isn't super conscious stuff that's happening. But yeah, I just wanted to name all of that because I think with lots of awakenings, you know, lots of consciousness raising, I think women can be deterred from it, waiting for the confidence, waiting for the clarity, waiting for the fearlessness. Mm-hmm. And it's not really like that. It's like you jump into the mud and you like wade through it, you know, and you feel it and you're going to have the journey you're going to have. But it has taken me quite a long time. I definitely feel comfortable now. I'm not thinking about my armpits when I'm at the beach or whatever anymore, but it took a while.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, like the reflection that on other women it's badass or powerful, mm-hmm. and that claiming it for yourself is like such a challenge. And even in your story about your daughter, I think it's important to remember that this is multi-generational.
Right.
The first Gillette campaign was like 1915. So we're talking about generations of women who have downloaded this program. And about your daughter seeing you, like we had that experience too with our mothers, I'm assuming.
Of course.
My mom definitely was like a classic. Yeah, so it's just really interesting claiming that the authentic woman, the biological woman for ourselves, it is really tricky and challenging.
And willing to do the work to learn how to stand in that, you know, because that's really what it is. It's not without discomfort, and it has been quite confronting. I mean, I do a lot of, you know, radical stuff to help me understand that, you know, whether it's the way I birth or the way I mother or the way I communicate. I mean, it shows up in all sorts of ways, but it's not out of fearlessness, and it's not out of like an obscene amount of self-confidence. It's more out of a real curiosity to find out who the fuck I am. Mm-hmm. You know, who the fuck am I?
Yeah. And even you just saying like through mothering and through birthing, like at the core of hairlessness, what the message is like you're only valuable as a maiden. And if
and a very
that is,
young one at that.
Yeah, a very, very, like a child. Stay childish. Yeah, so it totally devalues motherhood and croneship. If you're, totally. It's going to make it at least more difficult for you to embody those things as you continue through your life.
Yeah, so I've heard, you know, a lot of women have shared with me that they are interested in it, but, you know, their husband wouldn't like it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, wow, you just got to take a beat there to really unpack why. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, the not just the deep misogyny in that, but also the inherent like pedophilia, you know, yeah. And I'm not calling all of your husbands pedophiles, but on some level, the programming to be attracted to a hairless maiden is suggestive of an 11-year-old, you know, like when do you get hair? 13, 14, 15? It's pre that. Mm-hmm. You know, and that alone is so disgusting and horrifying that even if I'm sure there's aspects of my husband, of course, he's a normal guy in society that were groomed into that from porn and from everything else. But so what? That isn't a part I want to entertain and mm-hmm. that I want to like meet him at. It's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is, I have been very, very inspired by my children, you know, and I think that's a normal thing for women, you know, for mothers to feel, and the enormous responsibility that is at my feet, you know, that I'm stoked about, but damn, is it a big responsibility that she's watching me all the time. She's watching how I speak to my husband. She's watching how my face looks when I see my naked body in the mirror. I mean, it's so big, you know, it's so big and it's so powerful. And instead of it freaking me out, you know, I've decided to really like open up to the work of it and the inspiration of it. And it has meant a serious reckoning with my own conditioning, mm-hmm. right?
And your husband's, like, it's a paired working.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause I never asked him cause I don't care, like,
yeah,
you know, like I'm in a healthy relationship, so I never asked him. Also, like, I didn't want to probably know the answer, because if I had asked him and he had said anything other than "you do your thing, girl," like, "you're badass, I love you any which way," like, if he probably would say that. But if he didn't, that would be a huge problem for me. Mm-hmm. And so I never even asked him. I just was like, "I'm stop shaving." He's like, "okay." You know, yeah. And this, I mean, this bleeds into so many other aspects of motherhood and of womanhood and of marriage, because so many women are still in such a, I mean, it is a really, God, what's the right word? Like, juvenile space with their husband, where they are still, they're using him for permission and approval and security in a really childish way, honestly. I mean, it sounds insensitive, but it's just kind of true. Women are not living the lives that they say they want to live. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's doing what they want, but they like to use their husbands as shields to blame for why they can't do what they say they want, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
It's so common.
Yeah. I think the way that you did it is a great way. Like, if it comes up, first off, it's your body. So if your beloved is not on board and he feels like voicing that to you, then you can like hold up a little mirror. Be like, "honey, you got to look at this shadow right here," because yeah, it is. It's infantilizing a grown woman's body and gross. All the implications in that. Yeah.
Yeah. It runs pretty deep and it is worth thinking about. Well, I think the lines are blurred for a lot of couples around it being her body. You know, it's their body. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. their body, right? You obviously see it in the pregnancy world. We're mm-hmm. pregnant. We are having a free birth. My husband wants me to birth in a tub, you know, we for our birth. You know, there's so mm-hmm. much bizarre confusion around her body. And it's because it is their body. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the setup in a lot of marriages. Mm-hmm. It's wild. And she's obviously into it because she's co-creating it, you know, mm-hmm. whether she's conscious of it or not. You know, but it is their vagina. Like, I know lots of women over the years who, what's, how would I say it? create the pubic hair experience that her husband of her husband's choice. You know, whatever that is even if it's just completely nude, like an 8-year-old, they'll do it. You know, I mean, attending births in the system, I saw obviously a lot of vulvas, you know, and most of them were completely nude. Wow. Completely nude.
Wow.
Not one little single little hair.
Wow.
It's really terrifying because it is so clearly linked to pedophilia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right there.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So another thing I hear, but you kind of already touched on this in a way. Another reason I hear that women, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I like the idea, but it hurts when it grows out or it doesn't feel good or I get like bumps or but it's what you just spoke to. It's coming into sensation. It's unnumbing and that will go away.
Yeah. I mean, even think about like the family friend that said like, congratulations, you're a slave. That's a common practice is to shave like prisoners or slaves' hair. And like the idea of course, like there's like a hygienic aspect to that, but then also like there's a power in that. And I have a client who is a woman and has a buzzed hair. And without any kind of context into what we're speaking on, she revealed to me that the reason she did that was because like the sensation of her life in many aspects was too much. So it's like, again, it's numbing out. And it does take a lot of grace and patience, like when everything starts to come online, because all of those things that you've been numbing out to are going to come up to the surface. And just like, even just talking about the legs, like that's a huge region of the body that you now have to get used to. Much different sensation than having a bare leg.
And a lot of this, I'm assuming, is happening kind of more in the unconscious, psychic,
for
energetic realm. So people listening being like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're not going to necessarily consciously feel different walking in the woods, but there is but you're speaking to a much deeper awareness. Yeah. Yeah, I shaved my head once. And I was in the circus. I had long pink and purple hair down to my belly button. I was like so hot. And, you know, I was a dancer and a fire dancer and was always on stage. And and then this one day, living in LA, this one day I had a bad hair day. And I just my hair just like put me in a bad mood. And I was going around LA that day and I was like, this is inappropriate. Like that whatever my hair is or isn't doing, that I'm so owned by how my hair should look that I'm literally in a bad mood. Like this is bizarre. And I'm only 19 at this time. So that was like the extent of my awareness. But I remember thinking it was pretty weird. So I was like, you know what? Let's confront my vanity. Let's see what happens with a shaved head. So the whole premise of it was to confront my vanity. That's what I wanted to do, that I wanted to see what that was like. But the irony of it was, so I shave my head and go about my life, and I get more sexual attention from men than I ever had in my entire life and ever will again. I had men like stopping me, bowing to me. Like the level of attention I got with a shaved head was, I didn't expect it. I really didn't expect it because I was going through my own process of, oh, I look like I did chemo and I look like a child. And I was going through, I didn't think I looked particularly hot at all. But it didn't really help me confront my vanity, I guess is my point, because I got so much positive social feedback. Anyway, never again.
How long did you keep it? Was it just like the once and then you...
Yeah.
Let it grow out.
Yeah. It was like maybe, yeah, like 6 months or something. And then the really awkward grow out period. That was the real humbling part.
This is the vanity moment.
Yeah, it came later. It wasn't with a cute little buzz cut. It came later. And I remember, this isn't that interesting, but I remember that whole shaved head. I did it in the winter. And I was shocked at how cold my head was all the time. All the time. I was like, damn, that's wild. There's so much heat my hair is keeping in for my head because I was cold all the time, always wearing beanies and stuff. Anyway, never again. Yeah, the Sikhs don't cut their hair because they know it as an antenna. I always thought that was pretty cool, pretty interesting.
I think there are a lot of cultures that do.
Yeah. My daughter the other day was like, she's 7 now, and she was like, Mom, I'm going to shave, like, I don't know, maybe like a couple times because I just want to know what the rest of the people are doing, but then I'll just have hair again.
I was like, love that.
You got to explore. Yeah, give it a try.
Yeah.
Another thing on my mind, I also stopped wearing makeup. You know, like there's other, I would never wear high heels again. You know, things, it's a domino of this other stuff of like, what other stuff do I do? Because I was told by a pretty evil society how to be approved of. What else am I doing? And does it genuinely feel good? And how do I know? And that's where I think a lot of women still get hung up. They're like, I like how it feels to be shaved. I like how I look with a face of paint on. I like it. It's for me. Okay. But until you can look in the mirror with no makeup and no and allowing your body hair and feel real, genuine love and acceptance, bullshit.
Yeah, it's sewn in that self-hate, that self-hatred. Right. I think all of those things you're talking about, like makeup, high heels, push-up bras, Botox, etc. Those are all superficial woman. Authentic biological woman is like barefoot. She's got a baby on her breast. She's wild. Like she's the wild woman archetype. Like that's the essence of biologically how we're supposed to be.
Right. Or at least she's learning how to be.
Yeah.
Right. Because it is a process and there's always like a new edge to explore, I think. If it's not physical stuff, if it's not makeup, then maybe it's like saying no, you know, or something psychological. Like there's something, there's always something that, yeah. But Sister Morningstar talks about that concept a lot around the tamed woman and the wild woman. And for most of us, we are born into captivity. We are born tame. We are groomed to be tame. And then we carry, you know, the torch, or we carry the water for the tamed woman until we don't, you know, and it is, that's why part of the reason why I like free birth so much. It's once you free birthed and really felt your infinite capacity and your power, it's harder to lie to yourself. Women still do it, but it is kind of inarguably harder. When you become a mom, if you are anywhere in the consciousness of critical thinking outside the medical paradigm, you will be more connected to well, let's call it wild mothering. You know, there's Sister Morningstar talks about this idea of like, you would not dream, no one would dare take a cub from a mother bear. Like that is a crazy thought. If you saw a bear with a little cub in the woods, to walk over and take the cub, that's a crazy thought. Why? Because we all universally know she'd fucking kill you. She'd actually kill you. She would rip your face off and actually kill you if you tried to take her cub. The fact that we are anything less than that is unacceptable. It's unacceptable that we live in a society of women handing over their babies to the fucking prison of NICU, to the pediatricians to jab them up and, you know, fuck up their brains for life. It's unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And so things like this, not shaving, not wearing makeup, facing yourself, these small, you know, surrendering these small rituals help you get there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the whole puzzle, but they'll help you get there. And you have to begin the process of like the tentacles, like off your, you know, like pulling them off of you if you're attracted to the wild woman archetype. And if you want to be the she-bear that no one dares fuck with, then be it.
Yeah. Yeah. All of those like practices are actually constraining and confining and
right.
Just, I would just note, I would invite women to notice, like, what are you actually doing for yourself? And in what ways can you expand, just like you're saying, into the fierce woman, like the Kali, like, you know, this powerful woman versus staying in maidenhood or trying with all of your might to stay in maidenhood. Yeah, it's just a disgusting distortion because it never works. Time marches on. And wouldn't you rather be an empowered mother, an empowered crone, versus trying to change the tides of time?
And I love the word embodied, you know, because an embodied woman is resourced. Mm-hmm. She's internally resourced. And there is some level of cultivated love and acceptance within her. For sure, you know, unwaveringly so. And that wasn't handed to any of us, you know, at all. Yeah. Any embodied woman I know has really worked hard to meet herself so that she can know what it's like to have true, true internally resourced self-love and acceptance, which then leads to a sense of security, a sense of self-approval, you know, a sense of confidence. And an embodied woman doesn't hand her baby over to people. An embodied woman doesn't, you know, wear foot binding torture devices on their feet. An embodied woman doesn't take a razor to her armpits twice a week. She just doesn't. And so as absolutely judgmental as this sounds and is, in a way, you know, anyone who's listening who hasn't turned this off yet, you know, like that's my challenge to you. Like move the needle somewhere in your life. Try putting down something. Can you love your face without mascara? Can you learn to? It might take a year. It might not happen overnight because you've got to deprogram, but see it for what it is and then do mirror meditations. You know, do you ever do those?
Mm-hmm. So powerful.
Yeah. That really helped me a lot when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who doesn't know what that is, who wants to do it, I mean, literally just stare at yourself in the mirror. Get a mirror, put it on the floor, look into your own eyes. You can kind of zone out to your third eye and kind of let your face, you don't have to focus, you know, but look into your own eyes. Do it, you know, and sit there and say hello to your face, mm-hmm. to this epic window of your soul. And say hi to her and let your eyes kind of just relax and meet yourself. Man, it is so, it's so easy. It's free. You could do it right now and can be really life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
Mushrooms.
And notice if there's an aversion there, because that means that it's like fertile ground for you.
Yeah.
I think it's just this invitation, just like you said, it's not given to us, but in like a whole well society it would be. Yeah. Like grandmother, mother, child, like you would be getting this torch passed down to you of like, it's okay to love yourself and nourish yourself and try to bear that flame for your daughters and your granddaughters.
We must.
Yeah.
No one else is going to do it.
Mm-mm.
You know, we must. Oh my goodness. It's not that hard to change the tides. You know, it really isn't. And I can see it in our community. And I have friends with children who are older, you know, than my 7-year-old, who are already bleeding. And, you know, we see them at MRF, they've got armpit hair, and they're talking about the archetypes of their cycle. And it's just so epic, because it is our orientation, right? Like, we're always fundamentally oriented towards the divine, towards God, towards love, you know, towards universal truth. And so it's not a hard pivot. I mean, it can be psychologically, but it is our natural way, I guess, is what I'm saying, to know our wildness and to allow that to have some celebratory, you know, aspect to it. But we are where we are, and it's not given to us, you know, other than perhaps innately, but it's just not that hard. And surround yourself with, you know, come to MRF and see, mm-hmm. you know, be a part of a world where it's normal. That's really, that changes a lot for your brain chemistry to experience a whole week of it just being normal. You're not the only one.
It can be a really big launching pad, yeah. Something like MRF, to be in a culture of women who, you know, I think your audience is, it would be easier for your audience than many women to contemplate expanding in this way. Mm-hmm. But it can be so helpful to be in a closed container of women who are striving to be that authentic woman, that empowered woman. Such a beautiful experience.
All right. Well, hopefully this has gotten your wheels turning. And Danielle, thanks for sharing in the conversation today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars. Conscious